So my name is Alina Chen He. I'm from McGill University. I'm in my last year of undergraduate studies in physics and mathematics. So it is a really great pleasure to meet you all to present at the conference. And I really have to thank all the organizers for working hard and putting all that together and supporting us along the way. And also, as Professor Victoria Caspi said earlier, it is a great honor to be able to present in front of one's role model. Well, in my case, today it's even more special. Not only is Professor Victoria Caspi one of my the idol that I admire for a long time, she's also the supervisor for the summer research project that I will present to you today. Okay, so the research project that I did under her supervision, as well as the one of Dr. Steven In, is basically searching for neutron stars with the NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory. Ah, computer. Great. Okay, you're ready? So first, I will give you a brief introduction on neutron stars as well as the Chandra X-ray Observatory. Then we will look at this particular class of neutron stars called central compact objects. This is still a rather mysterious class of object, and we think that they might be disguised as another class of neutron stars called the radio pulsars. So I will tell you why we think that is the case and how we're looking for them. At the end, I will give you the results of our non-detection with the Chandra Observatory, as well as the implications. Okay, to the computer again. So Chandra X-ray Observatory is one of NASA's four great observatories. It's a space telescope. A very interesting fact that I like to tell you is that the space mission that deployed Chandra was actually the first NASA shuttle mission commanded by a woman. So be proud. So, with Chandra, through Chandra's X-ray eyes, we can look at neutron stars, nebula, black hole, quasars, even planets. So here are some beautiful images for you to enjoy. What we would like to do is to look at neutron stars with the Chandra X-ray Observatory. So, let me tell you how does neutron star works first. I mean, it's going to be a kind of a recap. You guys already got a full version this morning. So when a very massive star collapses under gravity, it will expel the outer layer of its material outward. And this is what we call a supernova explosion. So the star burn all its fuel, collapse under gravity, expel its material. When everything is calm again, we're left with a beautiful supernova remnant, as well as a fast rotating small core at its center, something that we call a neutron star. So the neutron star have many interesting properties, as you already seen this morning. It is very small, radius about 10 to 15 kilometers, very dense since it's very massive, so about the same density as atomic nucleus. So in some way, you can think of a neutron star as a huge atomic nucleus floating in space. It's mostly made of neutrons, yes. It also have a very fast spin, so imagine one turn on itself in several seconds. We find high surface magnetic fields on the neutron star, about 10 to the 12 Gauss. So the way we model this magnetic field would be with a lighthouse model, or actually a dipole model. So we assume that a neutron star is a magnetic dipole, and as it turns around in space, it will radiate out electromagnetic radiation. In this case, it will be in the form of radio beams coming out from the two poles of the dipole axis. This is supposed to turn around, but it's good that you guys already saw the real version and the bigger version, so I guess you're okay with that, right? Okay, so since the dipole axis and the rotation axis are not aligned, which is often the case, sometimes they are, but most of the time they're not aligned, so as the star turns around, we will see So we will see the beams turning around like a lighthouse. And when the radio beam is in the direction toward Earth, we will see periodic signals, so pulses, and we call these pulsing neutron stars pulsars. The first person who discovered the pulsar is again a woman, Jocelyn Bell, in her graduate studies in 1967. And the first people thought they may be extraterrestrial life, little green man, but unfortunately that was not the case. So things have changed a lot since 40 years. Well, in the first 20 years, people thought that neutron stars are more or less the same. But in the last 20 years, we have discovered many more unconventional neutron stars. For example, there are some with even higher magnetic fields, some spins even faster, so down period down to milliseconds, and some of them don't even have radio emission. So we want to look at this particular class of object called the central compact object, or CCOs. They are found at the center of supernova remnant, or near the center, and they show no pulsar winged nebula, which is a mystery because that is a high energetic particle jet that most of the pulsars show. And also they have lower magnetic fields than those of neutron stars of comparable age, but most mysteriously, they do not have radio emission. So until now, there are 7 CCOs that are confirmed, plus a few candidates. 3 of them have X-ray pulsations detected. Because of the dipole model that we have, from the period and period derivative of the pulses detected, we can infer the surface magnetic field. And as I told you, we found out that they are significantly lower than those of neutron stars of comparable age. So that is one mystery. We also don't understand very well its emission process, so the emission process of CCOs. We think that on the surface of neutron stars, there are 1 or 2 hot spots that are emitting black body radiation, so thermal radiation, in X-ray. But we do not know why the emission comes from hotspots instead of the entire surface, and we certainly do not know how the hotspots formed. But the most important question is, why don't CCOs have radio emission? So there are several possible scenarios. One would be that CCOs are actually radio pulsars whose beam just happened to miss the Earth, so we can't see it, so we can see the radio beams. Second scenario would be that CCOs and radio pulsars are really distinct classes of object, so very separate, no overlap, no intersection. And a third case would be that CCOs are young radio pulsars whose radio emission has not turned on yet. So we would like to test this case. To verify if this is the case, we would need to find an intersection between CCOs and radio pulsars, which means we need to find an object that has both the CCO-like X-ray emission as well as radio beams. So we are going to look for the intersection, but how? Well, since we already know that the 7 known CCOs do not have radio emission, what about we look in the large pool of known radio pulsars and see if they have CCO-like X-ray emission? So For that, we will need the help of Chandra X-ray Observatory. So, the experiment that we propose for Chandra is to look through Chandra's X-ray eyes at all the known radio pulsars, weak field radio pulsars, because remember, CCOs have relatively weak magnetic fields, and within 8 kiloparsec, so that's 26,000 light years from the sun, and also near the galactic plane. So the 11 targets that satisfy, so there are 11 targets that satisfy these criteria. Notice that the first six of them all lie within 5 kiloparsec. So we cut off at 5 here. And the other 5 lie between 5 and 8 kiloparsecs. So we already have data from the first 6 targets. So let me show you how the data looks like. It is a non-detection. So we have a sea of background of X-ray photons. And as you can see, we have no X-ray photon coming from the direction of the radio pulsar. And this is the case for all the 6 targets. Occasionally, we have 1 or 3 counts there, but compared to the background rate, it is not very significant. And also, note that this is a 5 kilosecond observation. Yes, we like to use kilosecond. So translation, that's 1 hour, 20 minutes about. With that, we are able to derive an upper limit on the number of X-ray photon counts. And here are the numbers for each target. But there's a very important conclusion that we can get from this, is that these CCOs, these radio pulsars are not CCOs. How do we know that? Well, let's assume first that they are CCOs and that they do have hotspots on their surface radiating X-ray, thermal X-ray, so blackbody radiation, as the X-ray comes from the neutron star all the way to the Chandra Observatory, some of it gets lost, gets absorbed by interstellar medium. So we have the idea of the distance of the absorption parameter. We can assume a reasonable radius of the hotspot, so 1 or 2 kilometers, and combined with the Chandra, like the spectra that Chandra gives us, we can derive an upper limit on the temperature of the hotspot. So here you go. I plotted an upper limit of the temperature of the hotspots versus the absorption parameter. Actually, it should lie in this range. We don't know for sure, but we know what range it lies in, and for a radius of 1 kilometer. And we can do this for several other different radiuses. And one thing important to notice is that all the upper limit temperature are below 0.2 keV. We're talking about keV because this is blackbody radiation. Now, for all the 6 targets, they're all below 0.2 keV. So here you go, our important results. 1, we derived a 3 sigma upper limit on photon counts for each target. 2, we derived upper limit on temperature of the hotspots for different possible radius, and they're all below 0.2 keV. The most important conclusion we get from that is that these are not CCOs. Why? Because all the CCOs we know all have their temperature of hotspot above 0.2 keV. Therefore, some discussion can be made. Since that these 6 targets are all the known weak field radio pulsar within 5 kiloparsec, and they're not CCOs, the result is compatible with the idea that radio pulsars and CCOs are distinct classes of object, but we still cannot rule out the possibility that CCOs can still have a radio emission, but they're just suppressed when they're young. So as you can see, there's still many mysteries surrounding CCOs. We don't know about their low magnetic fields. We don't know their emission process. And most importantly, we do not know why they don't have radio emission. Well, there are still a lot of work to do. We can try to look for more CCOs or to come up with new ways of testing our ideas. But there's one thing that we can definitely look forward to would be the data from the other 5 targets that we will receive next year. Now I would like to thank you very much for your attention, and please enjoy your stay at the conference.
For a question or two, quickly. Oh, yes, right there.
Well, you said that for pulsars, most of them don't have the magnetic axis
All right. The right way to say this is that most of the pulsars that we know do not have their radio, their dipole axis aligned with the rotation axis. Imagine that if they were aligned and that they are beaming at the Earth, you will actually not see any periodic signal. You will just see a continuous signal. Do you agree? Yeah. So the pulsars, so when we detect their periodic signals, it just means that it's, as I showed in the lighthouse model, because of the pulsar rotates, its magnetic axis, it's rotating. And if the Earth is here, the radio beam will beam toward the Earth and then go away and come back and go away. So all the stars with pulsating signals do not have the two axes aligned. Otherwise, we wouldn't have observed pulsating signals. We would have observed a continuous signal. But I'm not aware of any case where we have where we observe the continuous radio signal. Personally, I'm not aware of that.